of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Whiskey Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, January 25th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. My co-host tonight, Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com, where the beer industry meets the larger beer community. See the latest updates for Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers, store tasting notes, and keep in touch with beer events and beer groups in your area. Check out GreatBrewers.com. It's all about the brewers. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. If you have any questions, you can email us at BeerSessions@gmail.com. You can even do a in-studio call at 718-497-2128. So I'm here with Ray Dieter tonight, and Dave Broderick and Jen Schwartman are two regular lovely guests, and we'll have a special guest later, Brett Thompson, who's a home brewer. Ray, how was your weekend, man?
My weekend was so good.
Did you have a favorite beer that wasn't whiskey this week?
Yeah, you know, I was drinking, I did a tasting last night at DBA. We did an English ale tasting, and the beer that really stood out to me, I mean, we had Fuller's ESB, which everybody knows I love, but we had the St. Peter's IPA, which is such a subtle, wonderfully balanced ale. I think that St. Peter's doesn't get a whole lot of credit. They're making great English ale. Have you had their stuff, Jim?
I've never heard of it.
I've always liked their bottles. Are like, yeah. They look like medicine bottles or something.
It's a great presentation, and the beer, it's so wonderful.
Apparently, it's a beautiful place, too. Have you been there?
DBA? Oh, I like it.
Oh, yeah, that place is great. The St. Peter's Brewery. I think it's in some sort of huge old mansion or chateau.
Yeah, I believe it's... I could be wrong about this, and somebody can correct us on this. I believe it's on Parsons Green in South London. Not South London, in West London. And it's a London brewery. It's one of the few London family-owned breweries operating right now. I could be way wrong about this, but I think I'm right.
So did you have it on draft or just in the bottle?
No, in the bottle, in that beautiful green presentation bottle that they have. St. Peter's is really good. I forgot how good that stuff is.
What's so cool? We're so lucky that we're getting Jen Schwartman and Dave Broderick in on a regular basis. We don't even need any guests now. We have some. Last time Jen talked about her Blue Moon experience, and we had more listeners email in than we've ever had for any other show.
Yeah, she sure can talk.
You really can. Well, tell us a little more about you. You had the whole Blue Moon experience, and you told us how that started. Tell us another story. You've been away for a few weeks.
A lot.
We miss you. Come on.
Another
white
beer.
I will tell my stories on subject. So I don't know. Give me a topic. I might be able. I just got back from San Francisco. I was there for a couple days and wheeled my suitcase right up to the Toronado in the Lower Haight, one of my favorite places.
How's Dave doing, Jen?
I didn't get to see Dave, but I saw his lovely wife, Jen, behind the bar.
They're married now?
Yeah, they got married at the GABF last year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, on the set during the Saturday session. And
I knew she was
going to be there, and I knew I was flying in at 10:45 in the morning, and I knew I probably could use a beer. So I wheeled up in the rain, and Terrell Lowe, who works for Sierra, used to be out here on the East Coast, is back there in San Francisco. He lives in the neighborhood, and he came into the Toronado within 10 minutes with a big bag of dirty laundry. He was on his way to do his laundry and saw me walking into the Toronado. I was like, what a beer. He had to come in and chastise me, like, what a beer geek. You come right from the airport, go right to the beer bar. And I was like, well.
I got to say, the Toronado is a great place. It's in San Francisco. It's in the Haight. But there's not a lot of girls that go to that bar. It's kind of a men's
sure there
club.
Are.
Well, they did a motorcycle chick calendar that Jen actually spearheaded.
Oh, really?
So that sort of women do go, but maybe not your type of women, Ray.
It probably is male dominated, just like the whole industry is male dominated. But there are plenty of women who feel comfortable going in there. It's just a good kind of gritty, old school beer bar.
And Dave's a great guy. Dave Keen. What a great guy.
Oh yeah. And then I've talked before, I think, about the sausage place next door, Rosamund. and they've got incredible sausages. And
oh yeah,
you get the sausage, take it next door, eat it with the beer, you're set.
You got a sausage fest.
Exactly.
Beer and sausage. Who would have guessed?
So it's great.
What are you
and before
do?
The show, we asked everybody what, you know, what the best beer they drank this week was. And out of that, we got Dave Broderick had a really cool story. Tell us about the Three Penny. Is that a bar up in Montpelier?
Yeah.
Tell us about what happened up there.
It's a great beer bar in Vermont. There's actually two really good bars, the Farmhouse up in Burlington and Three Penny in Montpelier. Those are my two favorites. And Three Penny had their annual staff holiday party where they close the place down and they tell everybody to bring some of their favorite things from their cellar. So I think that total count was like 85 bottles.
That's all?
And so Jimmy was like, what was your favorite one? I was like, I don't even remember. I don't remember.
The whole party.
The whole party. But it was incredible. There were a lot of brewers there from Vermont and it was just an all-star lineup. I mean, you know, you were just downing these great beers that... You know,
Dave,
deserved a lot more thought.
Up in Vermont, like, do any of those feral mountain guys brew in the woods?
I think they're distilling up there, Ray.
Oh, really?
I think you nearly need to go check these guys out.
I think it's time.
I was telling Ray before the show, there's these wild people that live in the Chateauguay that people just spot them every once in a while, and they have whole families that just live there and never come down, and it's kind of strange.
They have a certain look about them?
Yeah, I mean, they
look, stand out.
They look pretty wild, pretty feral.
So when you say come down, that means come out of the forest.
Come out of the forest, yeah.
So they just like, they're hunter-gatherers in the forest.
They forage.
Animals.
Yeah.
Brew their own beer,
steal beer from kids that are up there camping.
Right.
Yeah, that's basically what it
is. That's a good way to live.
I think maybe so.
Maybe that's...
Living off the land.
Maybe we finally solve the mystery of Sasquatch.
But I want to hear more about this place, Three Penny in Montpelier.
Well, it's great. They
how long has it been there? What does it look like?
They're coming up on 2 years. They're right on Main Street, and it's about 1,200 square feet. And they didn't have a lot of money to start. You know, like most of us when we first start out, they were young guys. And so they sort of put this place together, and they got a great beer list, and they're really, really into it, really passionate. And, you know, up there, there aren't a lot of beers in Vermont right now, you know, and so, you know, they're making the best of it, and they're making a lot of connections with a lot of local brewers so that they get the great stuff. So, but they're a lot of fun to hang out with, and you know, invariably you go up there, and there's a couple of brewers hanging out.
Have they opened up their second place yet?
Yes, called the Mad Taco in the Mad River Valley.
Cool.
And that's just a taco place.
Do they specialize in like local Vermont beers, or do they get American beers and imports?
They do everything. Uh-huh. But definitely, if you want to find a Lawson's Finest, you know, they're really hard to find artisanal Vermont brewers. That's the place you should go. They're in the Farmhouse.
You know, Dave, I was really surprised last week. I actually was able to buy a keg of Hill Farmstead Edwards IPA.
I was supposed to get that, Jimmy.
From our Union Beer rep.
How did you get that?
I don't know. It was on the list, and I ordered it.
That's good. No, he is shipping in New York now.
That's news to me. I didn't know.
And actually, I have to say, I do remember the best beer I had, because I went to visit Sean. Sean wasn't there. He was in Portland. But I went to the brewery because I had a bunch of friends visiting from New York City. And he had told me on the phone that he had redone his Abner, which is his Imperial IPA, and changed the hop profile on it. And he says, I think you're really going to like this. It literally like jumped out of the glass. It was one of the most amazing beers I've ever had. So
that was already my favorite of his.
I know.
So
me
too. I can't even imagine.
Me too. And now it's like, it's just, I don't know, just something that's really much brighter. And just, it's a fascinating beer. But it will be in New York in about 3 weeks.
And Jimmy, so, don't touch it.
Yeah, that you can't have it.
It's only for Blind Tiger.
No.
Well,
I can't say that, but yes.
How does you know, you've really come in contact with these great small brewers up in Vermont. I mean, you told me not too long ago that they're making such small quantities, they're nano brewers. I mean, how do they get it together to start shipping down to New York City?
Well, Sean's got a 7-barrel. He actually is going to double it to 15, but yeah, it's really hard. He's constantly allocating, to be honest with you. And I mean, the guys in Vermont, you know, Scott at the Three Penny and Chad at the Farmhouse, I mean, they want to get, you know, I'm sure they'd rather have all of it themselves, and they certainly could sell it. But, you know, the brewers up there also have to think about, you know, getting their name out. And, you know, they need If they just stay in Vermont, not everybody's going to get to taste the beer. They need to get into at least, you know, New York and Philadelphia, maybe Boston, just to get the word out. So, you know,
you also brought up a good point, which was establishing that. Then they can sort of cover themselves if the winters are treacherous and people can't make it to the brewery to drink the beer during certain seasons. Then there's definitely a market to secure them through those.
Definitely.
Seasons.
And I really, you know, Sean sells 50% of his beer at the brewery in growlers, which is amazing because he's in the middle of nowhere. But, and so, you know, he really thought it was going to slow down this winter. And I got there on Saturday and it was, you know, this weekend it was, I think it was like 10 below zero on Saturday. And it took me an hour and a half to get a beer. I mean, to get a growler filled because there was such a long line.
Oh, wow.
So,
because it's old fashioned with systems and they have to pour it by hand. Like,
no, they're just filling growlers as one guy, you know, Owen in the weeds.
It's a tiny corner that's a tasting center. So.
Yeah. But it was just, and these guys were all from New Jersey, Boston. They had come from all over and they're driving a long way. They taste like five beers, fill up the growlers, and turn around and go back.
You know, speaking of beer, I need a beer. What do we got here? Oh. I see some bottles on the table.
You're very lucky. I brought some Salvation from Mr. Salerzo at Russian River.
Thank you.
So, Jen, what were you doing out in San Francisco? I missed that.
Oh, fulfilling familial obligations. My sister had a baby last fall, so I really was out to meet the baby, but for a couple days I got to sneak into the city and drink some beer, so that was good to... You know.
So was there anything really like exceptional at the Tornado Bar on draft?
Well, I always go for all the things that I can't get when I'm home. And there's some great beers. You know, you see some things that we love, Green Flash beers, and, you know, there's so many. And even Allagash beers were out there. But what are you going to drink? You're going to drink what you can't get. So I was hoping for some Salvation. They had Damnation and Pliny the Elder and Blind Pig from Russian River, so I indulged in all of those. And then Moonlight, whatever Moonlight does. They had the Toast, which I think is their winter beer, and what is it called? Bombay by Boat, their IPA.
Russian River, is that a brewery that only sells in California?
No, but we just don't get it here yet.
Not in New York.
Yeah, you can get it in Philadelphia, I think.
Yep,
can't
Philadelphia.
But they're pretty... They're still really small, and they probably will remain small. And so there's a demand in their region. So just like Vermont, where these small breweries, you know, when there's a demand close to home, they fill that first. Same is true with the Russian River. So
yeah, Vinny is one of the few guys that we were talking about this weekend. That one of the few guys that can do hops incredibly well, but he can also do the barrel aged stuff incredibly well, the sours and. And there aren't too many guys that can do both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually it's one or the other. But he really...
Well, it's also incredible that their flagship beer is an Imperial IPA. You just don't hear about that every day. Right. So that's... He's a rare breed and very talented. We're lucky when we can get his beer.
Which is why we're going to Craft Brewers Conference in San Francisco.
Exactly.
Let's make a toast to...
Cheers.
Russian River. Why not? Yeah. And these other great breweries across
Salvation.
America.
When's that... conference in San Francisco?
It's March
23rd through the 26th.
Yep. Oh, wow.
So it's coming up. It's a little earlier this year.
Dave and Jen, you might be representing the Beer Sessions Radio for that.
I think we will be.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward
to
it.
I'll wear my shirt proudly.
I got my business cards all ready to go. My Beer Sessions business cards.
All right.
I need some of those.
You can have some of mine.
Okay, great.
I got about 2,000.
We'll make them for you. And in the great tradition of listeners sending in questions, we actually got 10 questions from one listener. Dawn Land, who works at Sherry Lehman Wine. So she's a wine person who also is a big fan of beer. And we're not going to read them all off tonight because we're going to save them for you. But I know that I think that Jen is probably the first person I'm going to ask. And question number one is, do you find that hops are terroir-driven in their flavor profile?
Well, the problem with just throwing that one at me is I'm not a farmer. We should actually ask Dave that. It's my understanding that they are just like any agricultural product would be. But
I would say extremely terroir-driven.
See?
Just think about, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing these new hops coming from New Zealand. Well, they're not really new hops. They're just, you know, the old world hops that were planted in New Zealand and have come out tasting very different. You know, Nelson Sauvin.
Because of the terroir.
Exactly. Because of where they're now coming from. So, yeah, there's a huge difference.
I mean, I think that leads to the question of terroir. I mean, it's definitely in wine. You know, if you're in a state bottled wine, it comes out. And these are questions that people don't often ask beer people. But I did read a little article that said that there are regional materials, and there are certain beers like a Kolsch, a dry Irish stout, maybe an English ale from Burton-on-Trent, Dusseldorf Alt beer, or even Pacific Northwest beers that some people say may have terroir.
Well, I mean, that's the water, you know, has a huge effect on beer.
I agree with that.
And water throughout history, you know, before people started manipulating it, you know, that you – one place would, if they had really soft water, they might do pilsners, or, but you would see a certain region because of its water producing becoming famous for one style. Now, you know, that's, as a brewer, you have to learn water so that you can do, you know, if you want to do a range of styles, you have to understand how to use the water.
Like, for example, the Kolsch. I mean, those beers are so subtle, and I really haven't had a Kolsch that was imported from Germany taste anything like it tasted actually in Dusseldorf. The right. beer there is it's sorry?
They're so delicate.
Yeah, and lovely and great.
And lovely, but they
it's got to be fresh.
They it's super, super fresh. Yeah. And but you know, as far as terroir goes, there are breweries like Sierra Nevada that does their estate harvest at least once a year, and they have developed crops. Just people think that they grow all their hops for their beer, which they don't. But they decided it would be a great project for the entire, you know, for everyone who works at the place to kind of pitch in and farm a little and learn about these crops. And the crops have gotten stronger and stronger over the years. And so the beer has gotten better and better as the hops have, you know, matured. And so that's kind of a fun thing that they're playing with Chico's terroir.
And now they're doing a malt. You know, not just them, but also Rogue are both starting to get into growing their own malt. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, growing barley, there are certain places where you can do it and certain places where you can't. And so it'll be interesting to see if you do notice a difference in the flavors of the beer based on that. And hops, definitely. It'll be interesting to see if we start to see it in the barleys as well.
All right, we're going to take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
One morning I woke up and I knew it all. A new day, a new way, a new life.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, and joined with my co-host tonight, Ray Dieter. We got some great guests, Dave Broderick and Jen Schwartman, Blind Tigers, and our regular guests, roving reporters, and all those things. A neat guest is here tonight, Brett Thompson. He's from the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and we had an interesting conversation last week, and he said, you know, why don't you help promote our homebrew event on your show? So we invited him in. And for other listeners out there, listen, send us your suggestions. We'll have you on the show. We can talk about the special things that you're doing. So, hey, Brett, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Tell us about this Homebrew Alley.
Well, Homebrew Alley is in its fifth year. This is my first year entering in the competition, but it's a homebrews competition. They're holding it down at Chelsea Piers, and it's on the 30th of January. Unfortunately, entries are done for this year, but they have over 500 entries this year of local homebrewers. And it's a great time and a lot of good people getting together making good beers.
So it's going to be this Sunday, January 30th, at Chelsea Brewery. It's about 6 p.m. It's open to the public. You can go check that out.
And what beer did you just pop?
I just popped a beer I made for the birth of my son, who was born in November.
It's congratulations.
Thank you. It's a bourbon barrel-aged porter, a vanilla porter. So... it's little.
What's
little
a vanilla heavier. Porter? What does that mean?
Well, it's porter, and in the secondary fermentation, I put in some vanilla beans, and then I moved it from the secondary fermentation to a bourbon barrel, a used bourbon barrel that my wife had procured for me.
So vanilla beans. So you grind them up, you boil them. How do you?
No, they're the long beans, and mm-hmm. what you do is you cut them in half, and then you scrape out the insides. And then you dump those in there.
And at what point do you add that?
I added that about 7 days into the fermentation.
Okay, so it's down the road.
About halfway.
7 days into the fermentation. You're fermenting for 7 days?
Well, I was fermenting for 14.
14 days?
Yeah, about 14 days.
That's a long fermentation for a homebrew.
Well, you know, it for me, I'm still new at this, and for me, waiting that long, I about 10 days, I measure the gravity of the beer, so the amount of alcohol in the beer, and
what kind of yeast did you use?
For this, I used just a regular American yeast. It's White Labs 001.
And it went on for 14 days.
Active fermentation was about 3 days, uh-huh. and then the fermentation started to die off. And
right.
as it sits there, the yeast then goes and cleans up off flavors that the yeast may have produced in its initial fermentation. So I waited 7 days. I put in the vanilla beans. That started another a little fermentation for a day or two.
Uh-huh.
And then at about 14 days, I moved it into a 2.5 gallon used bourbon barrel that was fresh.
What bourbon was in there?
It was the Hudson bourbon.
Tuttletown, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Love those guys.
So I had one of their barrels. I was lucky enough to get one, and I put it in there and about 2 days. Because the surface to volume ratio mm-hmm. is so great with a small barrel like that,
sure.
that about 2 days into it, I tasted it and it was. I thought it was really good.
I gotta warn you something. I really don't like barrel aged beers. I'm just gonna say it to the general public. I think it's a passing fad, and I haven't tasted your beer. And we have that. This is what I have right now.
Yeah.
In this glass.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pass judgment on this.
Well, it wasn't barrel aged. It was just in there for a couple days to pick up a flavor.
But it's been going on for 5 years now. But it could be passing.
let's take a step back, Brett.
Yeah.
Just give everybody. We have a lot of really cool listeners out there. I know there's a homebrew group in Jersey that listens in regularly. Tell us about the homebrew group that you belong to, and we'll talk a little more about it. It's interesting.
It's the New York City Homebrewers Guild. I'm a new member to the group. I've been to a couple meetings. It's just a bunch of people coming together, you know, who make beer. You come together, usually get a presentation on water or yeast or something that's, you know, sort of mundane to the average beer drinker, but is really interesting to people who, you know, brew beer.
So if you're interested in joining, this meets
once a month, every third Tuesday at Burp Castle on 7th and 2nd.
East Village
there. And, you know, you get there and you people bring their beer and you get to taste a whole bunch of beer and have a good time and meet good people.
I have to say that I like your usage of the bourbon barrel because it's really, really subtle. And
subtle.
I understand what Ray's saying because I am not always a fan. It can so easily be overdone, you know, like a little goes a long way. And in this, you wouldn't taste this and necessarily say, oh, there's bourbon involved in that. You just know that it's more complex than just a regular vanilla porter. So I really like that.
No, it's well balanced, and I can taste the vanilla, and I can taste the bourbon, and it's all.
It's cool.
It's a well made beer.
Comes into balance.
Yeah.
So you guys check out the support homebrewers. You check out homebrewalley.com. Hey, Dave Broderick, you're one of the people that I most respect in terms of your tasting experience and knowledge. When you taste a homebrew like this, what do you look for first? Because I saw the way you kind of cupped that glass and
took a
moment with it.
Just to smell it. I mean, you know, just really to smell it mainly. And actually, I definitely the vanilla comes out more than the bourbon, which is
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You also want to warm it up a little bit so
yeah,
you can taste more.
Yeah, that was the other reason I was cupping it.
But you guys have to sit there and watch Dave and Jen taste because they did the exact same thing. It was like a reverential, like monastery thing.
I was watching her.
They both. Yeah.
I was just.
They took the cup in their hands. It was like Jesus Christ or something.
I needed to warm it up a little.
They just held it a little bit.
Sacred.
It felt too cold.
They breathed it in. They took their time with it.
Every drink of beer is kind of like Holy Communion.
And I had to count
well,
and see how many seconds
yeah.
till they drank it. But now this is the new standard. Hold it, cup it. reverential
cupping is key.
Yeah,
Jimmy, you gotta learn. I'll teach you how to do that later.
Then you gotta nose it properly too. You gotta nose it properly.
There's other things you can cup too, which is pretty good.
Meaning coffee. All right. Well, among those lines, we have two other great questions. The first one we're going to talk about, it's when making bourbon stout, should one use bourbon barrels, or can one add bourbon liquor or bourbon extract directly to the brew? Which method would yield the best results?
I think you're asking for trouble if you start adding bourbon. I mean, if you want to add bourbon to your beer, you could do that bar side, you know, just order a shot of
it depends
Jim Beam,
on how drunk you want to get.
It's called a Boilermaker.
I know, exactly.
Is that what it is, a Boilermaker?
Boilermaker.
Subtlety.
Shot of bourbon in your beer.
It all mixes in your stomach, I guess.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, ultimately bourbon is fermented beer. No, I'm sorry, distilled beer. But I can, you know, there's a story I can tell you about a very prominent brewer that was making a bottle-aged or a barrel-aged beer. I'm not going to tell you the story.
What happened?
Why? What? Yeah.
I chickened out. He got the look.
No, actually,
Jimmy gave him the look.
I get the look from Jimmy all the time, now but Ray. Jimmy wants to hear the story.
Yeah, I want to hear that story.
No. No, I'm not going to tell it.
Okay,
we'll get it out of you at
now
some point.
Now we built up the suspense.
All right.
Not going to happen, no.
Well, then we'll ask another question. Change the subject.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right, let's go. There's one last question from Don Land at Sherry Lehman Wines. Oak chips versus wine barrels. Which work better for beer? Does that's either affect efficiency?
Is that the same question?
No, the other one's about adding extracts to bourbon stout.
Okay.
This is kind of a big issue, I mean, because you don't think about it so much. Well, it's like, you know, you're aging something in a barrel, but you're adding wood chips.
I know in her question she was asking about efficiency, and the truth is that adding oak chips are a way for a small brewery that doesn't have the space and the money to buy the barrels, and then the space to actually have a resting place for all those barrels, to be able to do it in the fermenter instead. And then I think the brewery that comes to mind that doesn't use barrels to do its aging is Cigar City out of Tampa, Florida. And they have won awards, they've only been around for a couple years, won a couple of awards for their IPA that's a humidor series. And what they're doing is they're using staves, like spirals of the same wood that you use to build a cigar humidor. And so you can't buy a humidor and throw beer in it. So it's really the only way to do it. It's Spanish cedar. And it gives this kind of peppery, wonderful peppery flavor to the beer.
It's almost resiny, too.
So they chop up humidors and stick it into the barrel.
But no, they buy that same wood in a form that has lots of surface area because it's in a spiral, and they put it into the fermenter, and that's how they do their aging. And the results are remarkable. So I think you don't necessarily have to have a barrel and put the beer in the barrel to be able to pull it off nicely. Once again, it's like understanding the weight of, you know, your resources and how it's all going to play with your beer.
But I do believe that putting beer or anything into a wooden barrel, there's something magical happens inside that wood. You know,
that's that reverence and that spiritual nature.
Yeah, there's just something about it. I remember a actual cider maker who told me that, you know, every once in a while he'd have a less than stellar batch, and that he'd put it into the wood barrel, and it was like this. It just resuscitated it. It just brought it back. It got it to where it needed to be. So, you know, he always said there's just some magical quality about those barrels. You know, he never really quite knew what
it was. I believe that, too. But yeah. I think that instead of, like, limiting, you know, saying, oh, well, we can't afford those barrels, so we're going to have to just bypass that whole thing to, you know, there are ways to get around it.
Hey, let's get Brett back on for a minute here since you made this cool beer. What do you think about this?
Well, I think with the wine barrels as opposed to like the spirals and the oak chips, I think with a wine barrel you're looking to age a beer. Whereas if you have like the spirals or the oak chips, you're looking to impart the oak flavors or the Spanish cedar flavors to the beer. So I think you're almost looking at two different processes there. With like a wine barrel, they're huge barrels and those are a lot of times what they'll make a sour beer in.
Wine barrel. Yeah. Like a
55 gallon wine barrel.
That's like a barrel that's contained wine.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of sour ales are done that way. They pick up some stinky and sour bacteria that some funkiness that really imparts the flavor to them. But the oak chips are a great way. A lot of times you see it like with mine with the bourbon barrel. A lot of people will soak their oak chips in bourbon. before they put it into their homebrew and let it sit for a couple days in there.
You do that with cooking too.
If
you,
yes,
when you're grilling, when you, you know, you're smoking some meat, you soak the wood chips in bourbon.
Yeah, you can definitely do that, and it's a good way to impart a new flavor or additional flavors to your beer, and it makes it taste really, really good, I think.
All right, sounds good. Dave, what's this next beer we're going to drink?
Well, this is from Cascade, and actually, I had their VIN over the weekend at that party at the Three Penny, and it was unbelievable. I haven't tried the Cascade Creek, which I think you actually brought.
Yeah, we were getting some of that at Jimmy's number 43, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think we should try it.
So, like, this is Cascade, like Farm Aid, like...
No, this is a sour beer.
Oh, I see.
One of your favorites. I think you're going to love this. I'm going to make you drink it.
I think it should be a concert.
We're going to check out the Cascade Creek. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
When marimba rhythms start to play, dance with me, make me sway. Like a lazy ocean hugs the shore, hold me close, sway me more. Like a flower bending in the breeze, bend with me, sway with ease. When we dance you have a way with me, stay with me, sway with me. Other dancers may be on the floor, dear, but my eyes will see only you. Only you have the magic technique. When we sway, I grow weak. I can hear the sound of violins long before it begins. Make me thrill as only you know how. Sway me smooth, sway me now.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Our sponsor is GreatBrewers.com, and we're supported by TheGoodBeerSeal.com. We're drinking a Cascade Creek from Portland, Oregon.
What the hell is this beer, Jimmy?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's so good.
All I knew is that I had a case, and I really liked it, and someone bought six bottles, and I reordered it, and I couldn't believe how expensive it was.
So this is not homebrew. This is actually beer that's available in stores.
This is
I knew you'd love it.
All right, Jen or Dave, delicious. Tell us about Cascade in Portland.
And the concert that...
I've never been. I just became familiar when I was visiting Portland, Oregon over the summer. And my beer friend who I was visiting mentioned I had to bring some bottles of this back, thinking I couldn't get it in New York. So I hauled a bottle all the way across the country, went to Whole Foods, and saw it on the shelf. So much for that. But it's delicious.
But your bottle tastes better.
I think... They're known for their sours. I'm not sure if they even
this is
do
very sour, very tart.
Aren't they just doing barrel aged beer?
I think so.
And mainly sours. I think I'm not positive about that.
So okay, this beer is really really tart and sour.
Now yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So how do you make a beer this sour and this tart? I know we have a home brewer here that could probably tell us. Dave, can you?
No, we have the bottle we can read.
That I'm pointing at myself.
He is Brett, after all.
Brett.
Yeah, Brettomyces, yeah. it's the name of the bacteria.
Funk. Well,
so you infect
funky.
It with that?
Yes. I dip my finger in all the barrels because I'm Brett.
Okay, I get that joke. I don't know if...
He's Mr. Magic.
It says here that it spends over 6 months of lactic fermentation and aging in small oak barrels.
The thing you need to know about this is they're very, very... It takes a long time to produce a beer like this. It's not, you know, it's a very expensive way to go. So these,
yes,
you've got the Jolly Pumpkins and
Russian Rivers
Cascade, and it's just, you know, there's a lot of places trying to do it, but it's a hard way to go. But it's really nice when they do it.
It's really really sour.
Yeah,
I've had a lot more sour than this.
I have too.
Definitely the barrel aging has mellowed it out.
And the cherries, as far as the fruit lambics go and fruit beers, when you're dealing with sour, cherry tends to be one of the tartar ones. You know, you don't
so
get
this, there. So this is a creek?
It's creek,
I
yeah.
didn't see the bottle. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't
know I'm that. Sorry. Yeah, it's creek.
Oh, there it is. It is yep. creek. Yep.
I wouldn't lie to you, Ray.
I know that, Jen.
But it's funny.
Moment like of reverence as
when,
we all sit
when brewers come into New York City and they show up at the bar and the first, you know, especially if they're out in the hinterland somewhere, the first thing is like, okay, what do you got that's sour? You know, and they, I mean, that's
this
all
is
they
new.
Want.
This is a whole new,
it's new for
beer
us.
Thing. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it's not new because they've been making sour beer in Belgium for a long,
yeah, 100
time.
Years.
But, basically, all beer used to be sour.
Yeah, of course.
It's a new interest in the United States. And fortunately, being in New York, we have access to more imports from Europe than anybody else.
Because we're really close to Europe.
Because we're close to Europe. And so even, you know, West Coast brewers have come in asking for sours because they know that we're more inclined to get some of the real amazing, authentic ones, you know, like Cantillon, from overseas than they are. You know,
yeah,
more
but,
of it at least.
But this is not like Cantillon.
No, mean, I'm just saying that, yeah, we're lucky to be yeah. the crossroads that we are.
I'm not going
to
compare this to Cantillon.
Do you like Cantillon?
I love Cantillon.
Okay, what? Well, that's very sour.
Yeah, it is sour, but it's a different animal. I've still have yet to had a sour beer in America that comes close to that subtlety and that complexity that
you're
we
such
get.
A traditionalist. I love it.
I'm trying to expand my horizons, Dave.
We're going to force you to.
Dave, you said something cool before. You said that all beer used to be sour. Is that true?
I don't know if it was, but it was, you know, because it just there wasn't any refrigeration. And
so beer goes
well,
sour.
Also,
there was
were,
no quality
there
control.
There wasn't pitching of yeast. You didn't propagate
yeah,
yeast.
They had a
and
stick
so you had to
they,
wait.
Like, stuck
you know,
in
you
beer.
Kind of magically.
Like Brett's
made,
finger.
Yes.
You magically made well, this wort, and then you sort of waited for the atmosphere to take over, and there's a lot of bacteria, and it produces a lot of funk.
Yeah, no, that's right. It was
your
very
finger
much.
Red.
It was definitely not my finger back in those days, but it was. You didn't have the refrigeration. You didn't have the sanitation that you have these days with beer.
It was ambient fermentation.
Yeah, it was. You left the beer out, and I mean, you look back at the original beer was an accident. You know, it's that type of thing where you have yeast that floats around in the air that you breathe every day.
You can't
control it.
It
lands in something that is sugary and sweet, and it converts into something that's alcoholic, and then you know you refine that over
that's
the years.
That's called fermentation.
Yes,
that is actual. That is the definition of alchemy, right? I mean, that is turning metal into gold. It's turning weeds into alcohol. That's alchemy.
But yeah. But I did want to mention that the 6 Point guys are doing that. They're taking some random, or not random, but they're setting out petri dishes right off the New York Harbor here and collecting New York yeast to create some of their.
Okay, that beer. Scares me.
That sounds so
they're
gross.
They're using water
think,
right from
we need
the
to
river.
I think we need to talk to Shane.
Chateau.
Something's happening.
We gotta get Jimmy. We gotta get Shane back on the show and have him like stand up for this.
Bree, we gotta get Shane back on the show.
Oh, yeah. Hudson Valley yeast.
Hudson Bay yeast.
Hudson Bay yeast.
New York Harbor yeast. That's a very different.
Not East River yeast. Harbor yeast.
There used to be a brewery called New York Harbor.
Yeah,
long
I remember that. Yeah,
ago.
I remember,
Jim Pickett used to be their head of sales.
That Harbor used.
I wonder if Jim Pickett listened to this show.
I think they were out of Staten Island.
They were. Yeah. Oh, Sal.
Sal.
Sal. What's his name? That was New York Harbor Island, out of Staten Island. Yeah.
So glad they're gone.
Anyway. Well, here's a question: Would you rather have another bad New York City brewery, or would you rather buy bad beer from another state?
Well,
dumb question.
That's
not a good one.
That's not a good
Here's
question.
Here's a special message.
We don't want bad beer. How's that?
Heritage Radio Network. Each week, Heritage Radio Network brings you over 20 shows. Check out from Cooking Issues with Dave Arnold, We Dig Plants, and Beer Sessions Radio. Go to our homepage, heritageradionetwork.com. You can make a donation and keep all these shows going. All right, here's another question from another email listener. Matt Cole from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Some people say, oh, well, you know, how far is your listenership? Well, we've had people email us from as far away as Florida, and now in the flyover states we've got Michigan. Matt Cole. Okay, let me read this question. For a long time I've been under the assumption that I do not like hoppy beers, with just a couple of exceptions. Recently someone suggested to me that it may not be the amount of hops that I object to, but the specific hop varietal that I may not like. I'm intrigued. how would I go about exploring and testing this idea? And one thing I will say is that definitely the explosion of hops the last few years, I do have customers coming in saying they don't want a hoppy beer. And that's kind of new. Jen, what do you think?
Well, I think that to answer his question, the only way to do it would just to keep drinking and keep trying more and more hoppy beers. But I haven't heard that there's one particular hop varietal that's harder to tackle for the human palate, you know, than another. But there are definitely different characteristics because, you know, some hops are much more citrusy and fragrant and floral, and some are much like straighter in their bitterness. And so, you know, he might find that he likes a certain couple beers, and then he can do enough research to see what hops are in those beers, and then maybe try to cross-reference that a little bit. I mean, there's a way that you could do it, but it's not.
You know, Jen, I think the most important thing that you said is the first sentence that you put out there.
All right, I kept going. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. No. But no, sometimes it's like, you know, you say you're a smart person, and what you said, the answer to that question was keep drinking.
Yeah.
Just keep drinking
and take notes if you want to have a reference point.
Thanks, Dave.
Problem is, a lot of people will try something and then they'll quickly forget, you know, the details. So there are people. I mean, you don't have to completely geek out, but if you're really interested, then start taking notes and say, didn't like that one, like that one,
and keep drinking.
Yeah, see where it leads you.
There's so many variety. I mean, hop different hop beers out there. I mean, if you found a couple that you like, chances are there's probably some more. And just, yeah, exactly. Just work your way through the whole. But, yeah, be a little bit more organized about it and pay attention and write stuff down. And
organized drinking is what we're talking about? We're talking about
it's
drinking.
So much better when it's organized.
Constructive drinking.
Well, to flip this one, because it's Matt Cole from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Has anyone here been digging the Founders beers?
Oh,
love,
yeah.
Love their stuff. Double Trouble was actually, there was a couple of them at the on Sunday. They were really nice beers.
I don't know if I've met a Founders beer that I didn't like.
No, they're making great stuff.
I want to know more about them because I had the Pale Ale last weekend on draft at Jimmy's 43, and I was like, wow, I'm digging this. And I've got the Double Trouble on now, too. So I'm really enjoying
it. They keep a pretty low profile, actually.
Yeah, we had the Reds Rye last weekend.
I love that beer.
Beautiful beer. Really beautiful beer. And it was really fun to sell that one to people because they hadn't had it before. They weren't even necessarily sold on the whole rye thing because maybe the rye beers they'd had were way too hoppy with the rye. And that one was just somewhere in between.
So balanced.
Really beautiful.
The rye PA.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I think they make the curmudgeon, too. Isn't that one of their beers?
I can't remember.
I don't know.
But I think that's their old
I'm
ale.
Looking forward to having their porter on our porter event next week.
Well, I think the reason I brought that up is how do you guys, you know, we're all here beer professionals. You know, we first hear about a brewery that we've never heard of, and you hear a few good reports, so you start buying it. You know, other than going online to beeradvocate.com, how do you get more information about a brewery that's kind of new if you've never been there?
I talk to a lot of the beer geeks coming to the Blind Tiger. They are such a wealth of knowledge, and they love to share everything that they know and every opinion they have.
It's more than loving to share. They insist on sharing.
Yeah, they live for that. So it's fun to get them to exercise that muscle. If you know that they just got back from a trip to that part of the country, they will have lots of opinions to share. So that's one way, is to sit around a really good beer bar and talk to the people who are really into beer, and you can get a lot of recommendations that way.
And if you go there, like at a DBA or Blind Tiger or Jimmy's Number 43,